Hi.
Welcome to the Angle Podcast. We have a very important guest in the building.
We do.
We have Prof. TK.
Thank you. Where's the important guest?
Oh.
I'm still looking for this.
Yes. This is Prof. TK.
Oh, thank you
for having me. Prof is here to help us understand and unpack our tech landscape in South Africa. Is big tech stifling innovation, or are they advancing it? Big tech tends to buy little companies. They turn the little company into a product, kill that product. Sometimes they invest in infrastructure that the small companies themselves are building upon. So the bigger question is, are they driving innovation or are they killing competition? Here to help us unpack this complicated conversation and topic is Prof. TK.
Oh, no, thanks for having me.
How are you doing, Prof?
No, we're well. I think the enamored by the topic itself seems very big. and that one might argue it kind of is a euphemism for most of South Africa's economic landscape and companies.
But is it true?
Well,
is it a fair question to pose to the South African economy in that sense?
I think it's
maybe just in that answer, though, just kind of define what you consider big tech, like how are we talking about big tech in this space?
Well, I guess it's, if you're speaking about the ones that are coming from your US, you speak about your Googles, your Amazon and the like. Within South Africa, if you can call it that, for the shopping experience, you're speaking about your Takealot and the like, which is connected to Naspers. So that's what we mean by it. I think anything that enables you to actually have a digital experience, that's how I kind of think about big tech. Therefore, look, it's easy to look at the big alphabet ones because those are the ones that dominate everything else. Look, the Chinese ones, I think maybe that does raise a question why they've not really come to the South African market as much. And yeah, then it really just raises a big question of, yes, we've got that. Are you then saying that the subtotal of tech in the world can only come from the US? Look, we understand their companies are massive. There's a reason why the environment allows for it. But surely that my understanding of tech is always what innovation should be where people need it most. And surely a place like South Africa with its kind of different, let's say, challenges from different industries and also economy should be necessitating more innovation. But then again, when you speak to entrepreneurs such as yourself with tech entrepreneurs, it's not that to say that there's not people interested. Sometimes it's just seemingly seems as though there's constraints, which then maybe touches on the issue. And I said it kind of speaks to the South Africa framework. And I think we spoke about this offline. It's the idea of, you know, when you have this brilliant idea, where do you go? And unfortunately, most entrepreneurs, tech or otherwise, in South Africa will always decry the fact that I don't think government fully supports entrepreneurship. And our banks are, you might as well, I think you probably have better fortunes going to a Swiss bank to get something than to trust our big four, big five banks, because they seemingly have such rigid constraints, and they might argue Basel 1 and 2 and everything else. But my core belief has always been our banks are not suited for what this environment is about, which is you need to be investing, understanding that there's risk. Provided the entrepreneur can give you the books to say, listen, I've not gone on a joyride to Silicon Valley, to Shenzhen, and I'm buying the latest things. You should be able to say, listen, did you try?
Yeah.
And I think that's where, for me, the key problem is. It's more of a, maybe it's an attitude of policy. Government, by its very nature, doesn't like risk or doesn't understand risk and appetite. And tech is such a, it's an unwieldy thing. You don't know when the big next unicorn is coming through. But if you're not investing, if you're not taking a chance, then you basically are going to be where we are at the moment, where the economy does seemingly seem closed.
Yeah, we are yet to see a unicorn in this country.
Yet Nigeria has, is it three or four? I'm not sure.
No, Nigeria has four. Nigeria is moving. And I think three are in fintech, one is a marketplace. Nigeria is, it's proper.
So, yeah, but then outline the why that's the case, why Nigeria allows it, it's enabled in Nigeria, not enabled in South Africa. Is it a regulatory framework, or what? How do we look at that?
The question is, who's driving innovation there?
Yeah, maybe it's also because, look, the financial system, I mean, compared to South Africa's, like what you said, it's not as overly regulated. You look at the banks, and look, but maybe then does raise the question of what is the idea? It's critical mass, right, in terms of population.
250 million people is quite something.
Yeah, and in the world of data, that's rich. that's more than enough. But it's always the argument I have with my economics friends to say, then why South Africa, why can't South Africa be then like a Switzerland or there's Norwegian? Where does Spotify come from? That type of thing. So maybe it's not that. It's the way I was thinking about it when speaking about this topic to myself was perhaps maybe what we should not be focused on. Look, you're not taking on Amazon and those things. We accept that. But also, it'd be interesting how they cope in South Africa. Because there's Pepsi once upon a time came to South Africa.
Right.
But the way it was regulated, it was almost regulated out of it. So the question we should be asking is, what can South Africa make, which is an enabler to the bigger question of where the digital economy is going, where we're not saying we're not going to be Google, we're not going to be, if we can make it, great,
cool,
but if we can't, where can we almost tag ourselves? And this is where maybe a lot of these I'd say South Asian countries are doing. They're trying to find those little things they can hold on to, latch on to, grow, and then maybe make a good, I'd say, because if I say counterfeit, it sounds wrong, but I'd say something innovative, which might not be Google, might not be this, but it's enough to understand the local, and maybe understanding of local also has to grow. Because I think if we don't get it right in South Africa, it by ipso facto it means we're not getting it right in SADC. And I think that's where I think we miss it. It's maybe what we shouldn't, tech entrepreneurs, should, if they have the right funding and support around it, what they shouldn't, what they should be shooting for is not South Africa necessarily, but you're shooting for SADC, which is a 350 million region. 350 million people. Yeah. So,
but then the question would be, okay, if there is some innovation here, where we do find kind of the sweet spot where the local product does kind of hit the mark for us from an innovation perspective, or would you suggest then, you know, back to your initial question, is does big tech swoop in and buy you out and find a way to squash you or integrate you into their bigger hole, or how would you feel that would work?
I think the South African economy is, I think we have a word for it. We never quite knew what to say, but it's called the bid-vest model, which is to say when we see you do well, I think we spoke about it offline, it's either we'll go for your infrastructure or we'll just basically buy you out.
Right.
And look, if you're in the situation where you've been toiling and struggling for so long, everybody, look, you, in as much as it's a passion, it's a project, it is a business. And you should be able to walk away and say, look, at least tell your family that, listen, I actually did make money from this at the end of the day. So I think that probably is the problem. But then when you speak to a lot of guys such as yourself, the key issue is a lot of them would love to be able to scale it up to the level where they don't have to go into the, and obviously we're not being rude to Bidvest, we're just saying it's a Bidvest ecosystem. Right. And that's where I think we get stuck. And this is where, for me, the policy and the private sector, the South African private sector and government do sort of need to come together. Not so much to swallow these companies, say, listen, you need to get them bigger. I'm going to say something which probably one of the rare people who says is, I see what President Trump, himself re-announcing himself as a positive, because it really is going to create a digital, not divide in the sense we have in South Africa of urban and rural, but a divide in the question of which technologies and are you going to use. And the key question would be, well, if you truly are non-aligned, if you want to go down the India route, the question then should be, are you developing tech which would enable you to do this? And if you frame the question that way, then our South African private sector and government should be incentivized to say, you know what, America is large. That ecosystem all by itself, is it 80 or 90% of the economy? I'm not quite sure. Yeah. And then you have the Chinese who are still, I mean, as big as they are still coming up. Then the key question would be, could you carve out a little something for a place like Africa? And might that, obviously, I don't think it's going to come from all of South Africa. Nigeria, you've spoken about. Egypt, East Africa is moving. The question you should be asking South Africa, say, what are our traditional strengths? And when it comes to the tech, we're very good at fintech.
Right.
But I don't think we're leveraging it to the point of where it's for everyone. It's an issue of saying, look, you had your banking experience. I think you'll know which CEOs I'm speaking about, to a leading places which are owned by Rand, first Rand, and then you move away, you go to Stellenbosch, you set up your own thing, or you are a mining magnet.
Banking.
Yeah, basically money creates money. Right. You're a mining magnet, you're now starting this thing. So that's the closeness, which I think is not really good for South Africa.
No, it's not.
But the question seems to be, you can only do that for so long before the real big tech, the Americans and the Chinese, come on board and say, okay, look, well done, big boy. You've done well in your little market. We're not taking over. So I think it's almost, I'd say it's a national security thing.
Well, that's exactly my next question, the sense of like this public-private partnership. If you're trying to avoid the situation you just described, how can government actually help do that? Is that a funding issue? We've discussed that a few times on the show, like how the funding structure works in the country to enable these startups to at least have a little bit of a runway to at least get to the point where they can stand on their own 2 feet. How are you seeing that relationship?
I'm going to say this off the fly because at the moment my students were looking at sovereign wealth funds. So I'm actually thinking about it and I'm saying, listen, what normally kills entrepreneurship in South Africa? One is when government gets themselves in something they wholly don't understand. And for instance, we don't pool our money for funding. We have so many different agencies that do so many different things. And you'd swear that, oh, my word, is this country, are we the European Union, where we basically think we've got all this money floating around? In truth, we don't. It comes from the same fiscus, it has the same constraints. So my idea would probably be, let's say, a sovereign wealth fund specifically targeting tech. Because, it's the new sector. And the beauty about this sector, and I always say this, you don't know when the next big thing is going to happen. I mean, three months back, look, we were all having to, with a grinned teeth, have to pay ChatGPT that huge price, that monthly subscription. DeepSeek comes on board.
Right.
And it's like, oh. Now, I think it was a venture capitalist company in China, but obviously with links to the mother body, which is the CCP. So it kind of tells you that it is possible. So for me, I'm like, let's look at what we've done wrong traditionally in helping entrepreneurs in South Africa. One, government has an oversized role in this. The policies are not coordinated. There's no harmonization. Funding is all over the place. And when you say entrepreneurship, sometimes the government, they've got a very limited imagination of what does that actually mean. Are you simply buying from government and you're just another supplier to government? Or are you actually going to create something wholly new? Right, so we kind of park government. And then you tell the private sector, say, listen, guys, there's always this dream of South African private sector that, you know, we're just going to go to Africa, as though this Africa thing is going to just welcome us with open arms. Have a look at the rate of returnees of South African companies, your blue chip companies in South Africa that have come back from the continent, well, let's say with a bit more humility about their great standing on how the continent works. And then you look at, as I said, the digital divide, which I think President Trump is going to amplify. Then it's to simply sit down and say, listen, look, private sector, you guys, we can't unregulate you. You guys are just there. You just exist. Government, you have your problems. So why don't we go for an e-sovereign fund which says, listen, let's allow people who kind of get where this innovation is going, give them some sort of funding. Now, obviously, there needs to be a payoff of sorts when they do make it to unicorn level. And we can be able to put an evaluation and it goes up higher. Then we'll work out how do we repay you back into the same pot.
Right.
But I think at the moment we need to be a bit more imaginative about how we need to, and I'm going to say the word, throw money. Because this is not a simple, it's like a spaza shop a bit, right?
Yeah.
One spaza shop opens, another one opens. You kind of, there's always problems with Somalis and Pakistanis. Yeah, yeah. So it's become such a mishmash thing that we don't know what's going to happen. And I think that's where we're kind of circulating around when it comes to funding of tech entrepreneurs in South Africa, that we've all done this thing, but we're all kind of still in the same circle. I'd rather say, listen, you know, Stan has an idea. Stan, okay, give us obviously your books, what you want to do. Look, if it makes sense, and if we can all agree that it makes sense, and the key thing would be, it's not when you create the sovereign fund, the issue is not to have people who have vested interest in who is going to say, okay, Stan, you know what? After this meeting, you and I, let's go have a meeting on the side. You know, that's a great idea. I think my company or I think my agency in government would do well to pick you up. So we're able to say, look, openly, Stan, this is it. We're funding you. With a firm understanding, Stan, you have to be allowed to fail. We could give you $2 or $2.3 billion. Provided Stan can give us the books
right
to say, this is what I spent on. Because sometimes that's what I do like about tech. It's almost like research. It's an issue that the failure often by itself is the data.
Right.
Because then you can say to the next company, say, oh, you know what? Stan had tried that. Or maybe Stan comes back a second time and says, got a better idea. I know how to fix this click. Let's go for it. Until we do that, I think we're just going to be stuck in the circle where, by virtue of inertia, you're going to be eating over and then it's just going to be closed.
Now, that's a serious problem. Tech entrepreneurs in South Africa are not afforded the ability to fail quick. Generally, it takes you a long time to fail. And by the time you fail, you've lost hope. It takes you a year and a half to fail on something that should have taken you maybe 3 to 6 months. Mm-hmm. So imagine the time you lost from that whole year and 6 months because you just had to create a prototype and test it in the market. Did you have to take a year and a half to realize that that doesn't work? you build that in 3 months, but you struggled to get access to the market. It took you a long time to figure the market out. And by the time you got there, you're exhausted. It fails. And it's a setback.
But I'd say that's just a general entrepreneurship culture in South Africa, right?
Yeah.
Because if you really look at the... Look, I think the guys who've clicked it, as in they've made it, but it's such a few of them. The majority of what we term entrepreneurs in South Africa are people who came from the private sector, leveraged their networks, and I guess it happens in Silicon Valley, so it's not to say this is... But it's the manner in which it happens in South Africa that we kind of look down... When you go, I see this,
Yeah.
This person has failed. They've fallen.
They've fallen off.
Look, we have to... And I think until that mindset changes, where you have to say, listen... The person didn't eat the money, and I want to emphasize that a lot because when you deal with government procurement, PMFMA, what they're always going to say is, no, the person must have eaten the money. And just forgetting that, listen, to invest in the infrastructure to do this. This is a costly enterprise. There's a reason why there's a whole issue called the Silicon Valley or Shenzhen of the world.
Right.
Because it's people, if you look at them, they all failed. I think it's a hallmark, if I'm not mistaken, in America, that if you are a true entrepreneur, you should have failed.
Obviously.
Absolutely.
But not here.
Yeah, no.
Here, it's one strike, you're out.
Yeah.
And that's not really conducive for the environment. And I think if we were to be able to do that, and also I think it's also to change, I think time necessitates that we can't allow everybody, because one of the things I quite never understand when I speak to my Indian colleagues is where they found their niches, right? Because I mean, if you, Silicon Valley, great American story, but it's being run by Indians. So the question, as I said, we might not be able to create a Silicon Valley or those types of companies.
Right.
But the question should be, what are the, well, let's, as I said, those little latches that are doing well. Why is the Indian education system and environment able to churn out these guys who can run these companies and then later on, is it NVIDIA, right?
Right.
Be able to do something like NVIDIA. So I think that's where we need to be. And I think that's what I'm saying is a total mindset change that we're going to need. And key among them is the idea that guess what? We need to allow these guys to fail.
Are we relying on private for that to help us drive this innovation? Are we relying on government? And or what does that relationship look like? What does that balance look like in for us to drive innovation forward in a manner that allows for the entrepreneur to fail, allows for the entrepreneur to iterate their product in the market, and at the end of the day, scale job creation, essentially. But whose role is more key in this? Is it private or government?
I think the main government has been clumsy. And I always say this when I study policy is, I always say South Africa is 15 years behind where it should be. Literally because we have not fully wanted to understand what this... We claim, I mean, one of my pet peeves in South Africa is it's 4IR, as in... Then when you ask someone, what is 4IR?
It's WhatsApp.
Yeah, you know, it's WhatsApp. It's on this. And I'm like, okay. Because I always make when I'm speaking about the digital economy with my students, I'm like, okay, look, take out your phone. Let's see your web browsing history.
Right.
Obviously, those other things you do, that's not what I'm looking for. But in the main, it's entertainment.
Kids, get on incognito. You won't see what you see.
But it does still.
It does still see.
Yeah, sorry to bust you there, but yeah, it still does see. Yeah, but to say it's a lot of entertainment, right?
Right.
And I think it's the same thing with government. When you tell government, listen, I want, look, there's this thing in when you're leaving Midrand, these new, where they place all this machinery, data centers. They're data centers, right?
Right.
It's unsexy, and it has a lot of issues attached to it.
Right, and we don't even own a lot of those in South Africa.
But when you have that conversation, government just looks at that. It's not sexy. It's not what they're looking for. What they're looking for you to do is, I want to be able to take your face, what you do, put it on Forbes, and say, look, we've got our data champion. So government, I think that's why I'm saying they're 15 years behind where the curve should be. And look, the private sector in South Africa is very carnivorous. They are literally looking to our banks.
Right.
Yes, we've got these new startup little banks, but make no mistake about it, the big banks are somewhere funding or making sure that their interests are held. So I think it's almost like a mutually assured destruction, where for some reason, between what government has failed to understand and what the private sector being carnivorous, it's a perfect balance of South Africa seemingly does not want to move forward. That's why I say we almost need a neutral funder, taxing both government
and
the private sector to say, listen, it's a national interest question that we need to get this right. And national interest, we are not going to look, if we get one or two unicorns, great.
Amen.
But what we're trying to get to is, can we be able to start to be able to say, the digital economy is not something far away, but it's something where you can say, okay, infrastructure, right? The key issue of infrastructure. I don't think we fully understand it. And government just says, okay, we need to do infrastructure. Well, if you can't do the basics of a pothole, if you're moving now to fiber and these things, and then you always give it to the same people, it doesn't work well. That's why I always like examples of, you know, other equivalents where the Indians are coming up, where places like even partially Singapore, what are they doing to get right? Because government rushes to Silicon Valley, but they don't want to go to Hyderabad and understand what's happening there.
Yeah, and that's a problem. I mean, this idea of creating applications or solutions, looking at the Western contrast, going to Harvard, taking Harvard research and trying to build solutions based off of that research, which is out of context in the African or South African landscape, that's a bit problematic for me. But how do we set up this fund? I like the idea of, okay, government tends to get it wrong here. Private sees the opportunity and capitalizes on it. However, let's create a fund or an institution that destroys this little curve here where government goes left and private goes in and creates profit out of the marginalized communities. How do we set this up such that it achieves this goal?
Well, the first thing I'd do is look, there are certain state-owned entities on paper that claim to be assisting us to grow the digital economy. I'm trying to think of a key one. Is it infra? I think they're the ones who set up the hard, basically the core funding for when you set up big infrastructure.
Oh.
Infra, I'll get the name. Yeah, but I think it falls under the Ministry of Communications or Small Business. It used to be there. But I think there are certain state-owned entities who claim to be, suppose we're playing a role in the digital, let's say South Africa's digital economy.
Right.
I think you need to collapse most of them, funding-wise. Mm. Right? And then we have this thing called a skills levy. No one really knows. It's a tax which is being made. The private sector does it begrudgingly. It goes to government. And then after that, it becomes like a black hole. No one really knows what's happening. And then there are these things called CETAs.
Hey.
Where you speak about an ultimate black hole.
Hey.
Those are CETAs.
Hey.
Look, so I'd start there.
Yeah.
Sometimes we, what's the idea? One of my favorite economists is Schumpeter, creative destruction. Right? Creative destruction.
Oh.
Yeah, which is, I think you guys know it. It's what you guys can check anyway.
Right.
Right. So the key issue should be if institutions are not working, and the easiest way to leverage us getting the actual money so that this is not a pie-in-the-sky idea, let's start with that amount of money, right? And then the key issue should be, okay, we can't prioritize everything, right? So there's this idea of what actually works in South Africa, which we can actually be able to create a quick digital wins from. Mm. Agriculture works. There's a Nigerian friend of mine, I think he tried to get me to invest in, it was farming. It was like, I've seen it a bit in South Africa as well, okay. Where, look, I like the idea of farming. I used to those types of things.
Yeah.
But the idea of saying, look, buy a cow online type of thing and kind of get it towards.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I've also almost bought a cow, yeah.
Yeah, that one.
Online.
Yeah. I told you about that. What's it called? Livestock something?
So my Nigerian friend, he had it in Nigeria because of the weirdest thing about Nigeria. Great with all these other things, but agriculture is not their strength yet. They've got some of the most fertile land in the world.
They're not great in agriculture.
Oh, no, Nigeria is actually not bad. There are actually some boers who actually... Nigerian government actually invited them for agriculture.
Oh,
Nigeria is a huge net importer.
Sheesh. Agriculture is not sexy. Great in agriculture. Mm.
But it was like saying, listen, if you were to buy this online, if you were to buy this amount of land in Nigeria, you're helping a farmer. So it's an intermesh between where the economy is actually working, what you and I can quantify in a number, and you then bring in digital enablers together, right? So look, agriculture still works in South Africa. There's historic issues there, but with South African farmers, even without, not even like the European Unions or the Americans.
Is that you?
It's me, yes. We live on time.
Yes.
Yeah, even without the, let's say, I think the wording is not stipends, but those subsidies that the European Union gives the French farmers. And America, obviously, with their down the Midwest, they do get subsidies.
Right.
Even without that, South African agriculture competes. But I think there's a key issue which says, how then do you upscale that, right?
Mm.
To such the level where, let's say AGOA goes away. How do you get what we do into the greater African economy? being respectful, obviously, that look, we're not looking to be what America is in terms of scale and size. Well, you're going to need to be able to use a digital platform. It's a simple idea, but I think a lot of tech entrepreneurs in South Africa could easily sort that out. What I'm trying to say is you prioritize what you can do in the immediate with the understanding of we need to grow this fund such that to say, listen, Stan has come in. Stan asked for his $2.3 billion. Stan made his. Stan, we asked for a percentage back. Right. Not to government, not to treasury, not to the private sector, but back to the fund with the aim of ultimately growing it. Because unfortunately, government doesn't have the financial resources. The private sector in South Africa has resources, but I don't think to...
They don't have the incentive.
That's the way. They don't have the incentive. So that's why I say it's a tax on both, with the idea of saying, listen, now the only issue, and when I was trying to think about it, is who then do you put to actually head this?
Oof.
Because the interests are so varied and wide.
But this is that an NDO?
But this is why you're here. We thought you were going to give us an answer. Like,
yeah, I'm thinking, Prof. TK is going to help me set up this NPO that's going to stand in between this mess.
That's where the idea of sovereign wealth fund comes in, which is, I think, if you're statutorily regulated, right, then you make sure that, listen, this is not a, how do I put it, this is not your a Bantustan thing for life, where you sit on this board. Because if you were to sit on the board for longer than 10, it basically, you already amassed so much data and knowledge that the next thing you're going to do is a bit like people in Treasury who work at Treasury. When they leave Treasury, they go to the banks. It's not unique to South Africa. It's the same thing in the UK. Even in the US Department, I think it's Treasury in America, the rolling revolver door, where I start in government at Treasury, then I will go to the bank. So when issue at most you put five, but the key issue should not be the only reason you need people there so that we can have proper sign off to make sure that the finances are not going to the wrong places. We don't need them to come in and say, well, I think this Shark Tank. Well, this is a great idea. This is not a good. No, we don't need you for that. The idea is we want to be able to give money and see what sticks. And I think from that process, you do this long enough, data will show you what is our core strength in South Africa. Because my hope would be, you after you do this 10 to 20 years, you've got enough data to say, listen, this is what South Africa does well.
Right.
And we can go in there. But most importantly, the issue is not to say we do well in this in the immediate, but to say, what can we do in the future? Because I think where we get it wrong, and I think the South African economy is not, South African economy is only built for 5 to 10 years. What East Asian countries are doing, they're saying 20, 30, 40.
Right.
And I think that's where, if we could get to that ability to say, we are investing in something which is not there yet. Look, if Stan then wants to sell it off to Google, I think we put the right paperwork in place to say, listen, he gets whatever the share is, but 10 or 20% goes back to that.
To the fund.
To that fund. So the fund becomes... Yeah, yeah. The fund overall should be something bigger than both South Africa's government and the private sector, because the fund enables the actual digital economy of South Africa, and most importantly, the economy to eventually go to SADC. Because I think, as I said, we're only a country of 60 million people, give or take, depending on border crossings on a day. Because the key issue for me would be we need to be able to get this to go to SADC. And even eventually, look, I always say this, I am a South African nationalist at heart, to be able to say, listen, I believe there are other ideas from Zimbabwe, there are other ideas from Namibia, which we can actually harvest on. Speak to their government, say, listen, it's a percentage cut-in. You want us to, Namibia obviously would say, listen, you are coming here, you're investing in our guys. We're not saying everybody must come to Joburg. But we're saying, look, you got a guy in Namibia who's got a great idea. The issue is funding due to economy. Why don't you subscribe? Subscription model as a government. You pay a percentage into this fund, it then becomes a SADC fund. Because I think that's how the South Africa bites that we simply cannot be able to grow to the levels needed.
That's this one.
Well, I think the SADC idea is an interesting one. I haven't actually heard it very often. Look, I mean, there's obviously, from a practical perspective, it's much, much, much harder to implement. But as an idea, it does click in for me, funny enough. It's like it's just kind of like a philosophical possibility. Like, it makes sense from a regional perspective.
Yeah.
I think generally, politically, we're not so different. I don't know. Does anything like that exist, or any ideas around that exist, or
nothing clear cut yet? I think we have the basis of regulation in the form of custom use in SACU. I think it's the oldest.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, but then in terms of digitally, they're still speaking what I think the bugbear of you guys might be, which is almost at 1G level of the discussion, right?
Right.
Which is to say, look, we'll get there. It becomes ideological. Yes, we'll get there. And And I think maybe to give it more credence would be look at the Lusophone countries in South Africa, in Southern Africa. Notice how they're actually not integrated into the economy.
Mm.
Angola is a market. It is a market, but they're not integrated. Mm. Now, what they're integrated in, because we're looking at some of the big four accounting firms.
Yeah.
What they tend to do is the Lusophone countries are actually attached to the home offices in Portugal.
Ooh, interesting.
So they're not actually attached to here. It's always Portugal.
Does the same apply for Francophones?
Yeah.
Oh. Some colonial discussions to be had there. But sure. Yeah.
So if we were to say to the Angolans, and looking at their situation, that look, this oil, yes, I mean, we are drilling, baby, we're drilling. Mm-hmm. But what they're going to decry is the issue of digital infrastructure going forward. Angola has got enough money stashed aside.
Right.
A country like Botswana with their sovereign wealth. Because what you're right in saying, the reason I think it's practical is it's an incentivization which none of us currently have at the moment. Part of the incentivization could also be, look, this e-sovereign fund actually looks towards investing and setting up faculties of digital. You know, we have faculties of commerce and law and everything else. But actually saying, listen, if you subscribe, is part of the money goes towards investing in your universities, in your technicons, so that you can actually start getting the human capital out of here. Because it's not always going to be that everyone wants to start this big company. Like I said, that's why I like the India model, because it fascinates me. Like, how is it that Silicon Valley literally is run by India?
Yeah, the CEO of Microsoft.
All of them.
You want to be. Yeah, it's not just about the big company. You do want to enable careers.
Yeah,
you want right. You want people to just say want a good solid career in tech space, doing like good innovative products.
Has this model worked anywhere in the world?
I would say no, because as I said, I was looking at it. Like I said, I always want to make the disclaimer that my background is I look at local government. I started off at local government and local economic development. And I think we're speaking earlier on that the key idea when you look at local economic development is a systems approach, right? Where you have to speak to a mother or a grandfather who's just started a spaza shop or has got a legacy shop. My dad was in what's termed NAFCOC. Those old business, those business collaborations, which weirdly enough, they're partly government protected. Because I said, look, if you're a black business, you should be able to do well in your township, in your homeland. Lo and behold, 1994 has not been kind to them. So my understanding of the economy is always that it cannot be that TK goes to university, wakes up, works for Microsoft. Because, look, unfortunately, it's becoming a rarity, employment in South Africa. So the way, when you look at the local economic development, especially from a local government perspective, is the key issue you're trying to get to is how do I enable people's different strengths, right?
Mm.
If yours is literally a spaza store in an informal economy, the question should be, how do we better do that?
Mm.
And this is where I think the greatest invention for the informal economy in South Africa has been that those tap-tap things, right?
Right, right.
So you mean to tell me there's not people in this country who could be able to better help the informal economy to be more efficient? So, because that's the issue. For me, tech should be an enabler.
Right. Mm.
Then there are those rare individuals who literally God has given them the ability to come up with something where we're like, wow. But it's a point. It's not a general population thing.
No.
So yeah, I think your point of saying it should be maybe how do we get the new mechanics? Was a digital mechanic, data mine? Those types of things. And I think the way we've looked at it is to say, I think it's a baseball analogy. We're always going for a home run.
Mm.
It's like, oh no, this policy must hit the home run. And you're like, this is even the Americans said this is not how it works. There's a lot of failure in this, but it must always be a home run. Where I get inspiration, I think, for tech-wise is, look, how did Taiwan safeguard itself or trying to safeguard itself?
Right,
they said,
right.
Look, we can't, because I think a lot of this, you'll tell me if I'm wrong, the whole is a TLC, that big company, TMC, the company that makes those very sophisticated, very thin. Is it the Chinese, no, the Taiwanese one, it's Taiwanese, they make the semiconductors, that company.
Yeah.
Well, I think history, everybody knows it, too. The semiconductor was in the United States, but it was floundering because also government was too much involved in the self-interest. Here is a little country says, I think the founder goes to the U.S., he notices this is not working, and he kind of makes a gambit for it.
Mm.
And this is how Taiwan's protected. So sometimes I think we do need to go study, but for the purpose of saying, look, America, I'm sure there's a lot of crumbs that are falling in tech,
right,
which we could easily do. But we just want, you want to make your own Google in South Africa.
Guys like Stanley want to be a billionaire like that, you know? That's why.
When you make it, just remember I was for you.
Leave me alone.
So I think that's where I think we kind of get it
wrong. Right. But we do, as a country, have an appetite to fail and spend money. If you look at the way we've been funding small businesses, clearly we can see, the CETAs can see, that there's no proper throughput.
And that's the biggest misnomer CETAs do not see. Or do
what?
Not want to see.
How? What do they think CETAs, all the money is going?
CETAs have, this is not my wording, look at the government reports. CETAs, when I say CETAs have become a black hole, that's literally it. For instance, by now, I mean, what? Let's say 25 years, let's be kind. 20 years, let's be kind.
Right.
Surely you should know what works and what doesn't work in entrepreneurship in South Africa.
And you would have changed the model.
And you would have changed the model, but you don't. Because there's now a perverse incentive to ensure CETAs just exist. Because CETAs have boards. You put people on boards. Problem Do those people starts. Actually know what's happening there? Not necessarily, but it's a perverse incentive to put people on these things. That's why I said, if we were to say, TK, like you asked me practically, where do we start with actually getting seed funding for this e-sovereign wealth fund? Cut CETAs. You cut them. Because when everybody knows...
You know we're going to quote you on that, right?
No. I have no qualms about being...
Right.
Because they need... Because literally, we are wasting money. And this is the thing. Now, I think people fully understand. I was saying this all along. We do not have money in South Africa. And not to say that we... Some people say we can print that. That's a debate, which is not for this podcast.
Yeah.
But I'm like, even with that, we don't... What we really have is we've got a limited, literally limited amount of resources in terms of financial capital, also time, because I think the most brutal thing about the digital economy, and the Chinese are showing you this in terms of how rapidly they're catching up, is when I say we're 15 years behind, that's me traditionally using policy terms
right.
and ideas and even the numerics, right? Now with things like quantum, we don't know what happens when you put the quantums and these things start working. What's that law? Moore's law type thing,
yeah.
right? So we're almost saying, it's always I call it a South African fallacy. Oh, no. You know what? We'll just get a right government and things will fall into place.
Oh.
As though the world is simply going to say, South Africa, we're waiting for you to find yourself. And when the digital economy, when you find the right gurus, everything will be in place for you. No, it's a brutal world. The digital economy is brutal. And I think that's the part our policymakers just refuse to get, that it is a brutally, I probably say it's probably the most brutal economy in this new world, because it simply does not wait for you.
So, I mean, I suppose this question kind of, you've already answered it throughout our conversation, but I mean, in your perspective and in your view here, what needs to change? I mean, what would you consider to be a future ready digital economy in South Africa?
I think piggybacking on one of the podcasts you did with our colleague Chikane, and it's something which we say it, but we don't really meet in South Africa, is we need to prioritize what we can do. Let's say, what are the five key... I mentioned fintech as one of the things that we can do, and we do very well. The financial services sector in South Africa, look, it is great. The issue is it's very close, and we all know who the big players are. Health, I think, is something which is... not in terms of what's going to happen in the future, we are... Oddly enough, South Africa people, we never quite do the maths with it. South Africa, we're actually going to be experiencing what the Chinese, our population is actually going to get old.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a weirdest thing when we're doing research that I think
those we're actual live
people. No, South Africa is actually, they say we're young, right? But what they don't tell you is what happens after the youth, after the youth bulge, right? That's where we have a bit of a problem. Meaning I'm not saying people must, I'm not Julius who's saying go create more babies, but it's an issue of saying we haven't really looked at what happens once this bulge of youth we have comes through, right? We're basically going to be saying, people are having less kids and everything else. So it's going to be a question of health. For me, look, love them or hate them, I hate the premiums every month. Discovery is a wonderment. Discovery is no longer a health company. It is a digital, for better or worse. It's a very, I'd probably say it's probably the greatest South African invention in terms of a digital economy we have.
Yeah, that vitality program.
It is everything, right? So I think health, but here's the thing, in as much as discovery is everything, government also has an equivalent healthcare company. GEMS. Where's GEMS? GEMS still operates as a medical aid.
Yeah, I know that for nurses, I don't see.
Yeah, my mom was a teacher, but then here's the issue. So you have all this data, because that's now the new liquid that we.
Mm.
You mean to tell me you simply? I'm not saying sell yourself to Discovery, but surely there is a tech. If I'm government, it incentivizes me to say Discovery is too big now. It's becoming a too big to fail.
Right.
Surely there must be someone I can invest in health who can simply say, listen. What we're doing is we're putting 20% into GEMS.
Mm.
But the key issue is I want you to literally compete with Discovery. Make sure that you kind of take them a notch down a bit. Right?
And you're right. GEM hasn't evolved one bit.
No, still the same. Bobonita, still the same. So you are playing. Yeah. So I think it's FinTech Health.
Yeah.
Because, look, worse or for better or worse, the type of diseases and viruses and just lifestyle issues South Africa has lent itself to great data. Now, you might say, look, I don't want to lead a GEMS, but surely there's some data you can make that can make give you the next big company to come up, right? I think agriculture is one. The Middle East at the moment is undergoing their own revolution. They want food. They want to be able to get it quicker, better from us because we make those things. Where are those companies that are helping our farmers to get this small-scale farming? You know, I know there's polytech farming and the like, but so it's three industries I've mentioned. Mining. We, South African mining companies, unfortunately, they still operate like mining companies. They don't get that what they should be doing is to say, and this is where government should also be coming in, to say, look, guys, you've got such amazing longevity of mining data and history. How are we not able to get tech entrepreneurs, guys who are maybe engineers, to be able to say, listen, let's concentrate on being the next service provider to all other mining, big mining in the world.
Right.
They already take our engineers, but why is there not someone thinking around the data and the analytics of making a company that simply says, listen, I'm going to Brazil, and all I'm simply there to do is put on my app that basically makes mining more sustainable, works better, that type of thing. So that's four. And the other thing is, I'd say e-government, but in a way, a crashing government. Mm. We are literally a textbook example of how government can go wrong in so many places. Surely there are people who've got history to be able to reform this. I've got a buddy, Sandile. I think he's got a nice fancy title because he's at a local government doctor. He is South Africa's government's first data officer, chief data. I'll get his name, but Sandile is brilliant. I think you should have him on. Brilliant guy. But he's literally, Sandile is making waves in government by simply being able to harness the crash that is government and basically reorientating the data.
Oh.
Yeah. So you mean to tell me on a continent with, 53, give or take, other African countries?
So you're saying city data portals is the answer?
maybe, but I would say for people who are into tech entrepreneurship, as I said, you might not be a Google, but surely the beauty of us is that we've made so many policies, we've made so many institutions, we've made so many turns, that if you actually study that, you could literally leverage that as a business to say, go help other African countries and governments do this.
Mm.
At a cheaper, you're going to be cheaper than McKinsey, you're going to be cheaper than AWI, Amazon and the like. So that's what I'm saying. There is opportunities. But I just don't think we prioritize it properly because we are hitting for sixes at places which we shouldn't be hitting for sixes. And I guess I'm kind of putting towards is the outside of the U.S., and the U.S. is a very unique case study all by itself because the military was heavily involved.
Mm.
We have literally shut down our defense industry, which was a mistake.
Big mistake.
World Wide Web. American army, American military thing. So that's one of the things we should be looking at. So what I'd say is you do kind of need, as a developing country, government to almost angle you without them being stopping the process.
Okay.
Because the Chinese kind of show you that government does need to be involved. It's a question of how far it goes. And I think that's where the debate really comes in.
Is the Competition Commission and the, what is this, Competition Tribunal well set out to assist in this transition of the five pillars that you just mentioned?
I don't think so. I think they are now starting to get it, because if I'm not mistaken, the 2-3 weeks ago, there's some discussion about we now want to fine Google so that they can pay our media. It's not a new idea. The Australians
have testified. Yeah, in that commission.
So for me, it's a start because at least they're getting it.
Right.
To say, look, this is not a free competition here. It is complicated because even the Australian, their government took a big backlash from doing that. And it was from the citizens who you would think would want to, and Australian citizens, having lived there by and large, are very patriotic. But you would have assumed they would be, but they're like, no, you're stopping my fun now.
Yeah. Oh.
You're stopping my fun. But obviously the Australian government still went ahead with it.
Right. And
we'll see how it works out. I'm happy competition. But so it would be an issue of where you say, look, one of my pet projects is I'm a believer in, I always make the argument to the Kotsofete, I'm Doge before Doge happened. Which is to say, I really do believe we should be cutting down on, not government services, government, like ministries. We have so many ministries that speak about the digital economy. You're like, do you really understand what the digital economy is? And then we have these many, many institutions which are pseudo-funding entrepreneurs. So I think maybe if we had I think it's almost like a reverse Doge, which starts with the competition tribe to say, listen, we're carving a niche for our industries in these five things. But you must expect blowback because that means you're going to be taken to the World Trade Organization because you can't simultaneously say you are for trade and then do things like this. I think
didn't America just leave the WTO anyway? It doesn't matter.
I would say America is the thing is, and the one thing I do wish our officials would do is simply visit, because I was in Texas, I think UT, University of Texas. Visit America. Don't go to Hollywood because that is, I don't know what the fascination is.
California is like Cape Town. It's different country.
Go visit America's campuses, universities, where you literally see universities with endowments that are bigger than Swaziland, Lesotho combined. Because I think that's the part where I think we missed about America is when you visit their campus, you fully see, my lord, we understand why there's an overproduction of knowledge which comes from there. And that's what, so for our government, one of the things I'd love our government officials to simply do is, don't even say you want to attend Harvard, because they love doing that.
Right.
Simply go have and look at their campuses and how much investment they've made in research, R&D, which is a combination of private and public. If you're Columbia, you're sweating your assets at the moment. University, because the public part is kicking in.
Right.
Because I think that's, and then you'll understand why I say you have to carve it out. But you're smart in what you carve out, because you can actually go to the WTO and say, listen, there's a reason why we want to protect this industry. And they allow you to be able to make your point in your case, verse and chapter, why you're doing this. And the reason I say I'd start in America, so that you get the understanding of how and why they do protect their own industry. But they are at that level where they literally can say, we don't really need this anymore because we're an economy all by ourselves. We literally 60, wherever we have to put that, 60 little million people. And out of the 60 little million people, not all of us are working. So there's an incentive for you to carve this out for yourself. But I think you only get it, and our officials, as I said, they always miss this point. Look, I know going to Shenzhen, you do get the same feeling. But I think equivalent for equivalent in terms of Chartis Paribus, as economics says, I think the American model is something which most South Africans are closer to understanding of an R&D, which is both private and public. And that's why I say I think they went to the wrong parts of the U.S. They should have gone to these big universities to understand how this dynamism sort of works together.
Sure, they do go, but the sad part is
do they go to Geneva or do they go? Where do they
go? They go to big universities in the U.S., right? Your Harvards and things. But my problem with that is they look at innovation that happens there and they want to copy and paste it here. And I like what you're saying, to say, look and observe how the output of knowledge and skills that you see from these universities and what they are then able to do in interpreting the problems in the state into innovation. But instead of us going there to go, oh, so this is what innovation looks like, let me go back home and invent the same thing, which does not apply to the context of the continent and the country. So I like what you're saying, that let's go see the output of knowledge. Again, there's a lot of research that sits in many universities in the country, but that research is not available to most tech entrepreneurs to create solutions off of the research that's done. And then you get this disparity of there is research, there is skill, but there's no in between. Again, to the conversation, who's driving innovation and who should be tasked to drive innovation and how should we be driving innovation, because we do have the skills, both from the technical skills to build things and the knowledge to research, which sits in your universities like VETS. And, but then who gets to build the middle ground to say, okay, skill meets research or skill meets data, and let's build.
Yeah, which brings me to where you're making, because I think we're not creating this e-sovereign wealth fund, would be the idea. I attended UKZN.
The sovereign fund is coming. I'm telling you, man.
I attended UKZN. One of the things which we have, because I was doing politics and management, one of the things we do every final year is you go see what engineering students are producing, robotics and stuff.
Mm.
And you'd see, well, I think I saw one student created a helicopter that could almost fly backwards.
Oh.
This is like 10 years ago.
Whoa.
And my only thing was, because I was speaking to a lot of guys who ended up, weirdly enough, our best talent, then we take them to ESCOM. And they're like, okay, that's it. So they've hit their peak. So, and he was like, this guy can...
ESCOM is your peak.
This guy can only really make this idea financially viable if he goes to the US.
Mm. Ooh. Yeah, absolutely.
And that's when I got that.
Absolutely.
Because really, who was going to invest in it? Danel is supposed to be.
Right,
but they were not there.
Sheesh.
So if you're actually saying the information, everything is here.
Right.
That's why I say one of the things maybe you do with the Sovereign Wealth Fund is to actually say this, and guys, VITS, UKZN, Schools of Engineering, Computer Science, and everything else, well, part of the Sovereign Wealth Fund, maybe it's almost changed the structure of what a university does, which is to say, instead of the final year thing, yes, it's for marks because you have to kind of record that on paper, but to say, listen, here's an incentive that if you produce, and I wouldn't go for best one, because as I said, one is, that's our mistake.
No one is a
problem.
Always
go for one. Best 10 or 20 best ideas. And we say in the final year, listen, each student who's made it to final year, we vet them, obviously, here's 100 million.
Mm.
Literally go make an idea. Let's see, because then you're doing two things. You're kind of creating little somewhat incubators, because that's what the university is supposed to really be about. And then you're actually saying, here's financial resources to actually make your idea come true. Because this is, we've trained this person for 3 or 4 years. Surely we should be able to say, okay, go fly.
Oh, that's interesting. So universities could be one of the key drivers of innovation in that
sense.
The
structure would have to change. Because you don't then put...
You don't just create another department that funds your students.
But what you then simply do with your final year computer science engineering, you put them... Yeah, maybe
you
it's
create
a hybrid.
Hackathons in the university, and then there's an arm that funds.
But what you do is you then have to... You don't leave it to a professor of TK who... Because I'm marking what's technically available, right? It's not like, oh my word, I've created this.
Right.
But the key... Because sometimes, you know, this is where universities become a problem, because we're still stuck in... Remember, I need to give you a grade.
Oh, yeah.
So so we still say, look, respect the professor and the grade because they got you that far.
Mm.
What you then want is maybe, this is where the Sovereign Wealth Fund again comes in, to say, listen, the pass mark here is simply show us that it can work.
Mm.
And it's almost like math. So that's the beauty of math, right? That when you're solving for.
Right.
The answer, you might not have got it, but what we start doing is we mark you backwards to say, okay, these are the steps that you follow, and that's what we want. So maybe we then need to create a schematic, say, that's what we're going to mark the student for. If it's something, wow. And then, look, the big prize is simply we move you from 100 million.
Would it be a huge leap for the university to create sort of two curriculums? One which is the current one, which is a textbook and test, and the other which is a bit more practical. Instead of the student only having the option to go through the textbooks and the test and the semester tests, here's an idea that they can build, but build it academically, and you mark it within that particular structure. Would it be, what are the odds? Is it easier to create that learning stream versus creating a department within the university that can fund ideas from students to drive innovation?
I don't think it has to be two. I think we already have the model, isn't we? We already have the students.
Right.
And the students, I think, have got the ideas. What is missing is, what do you understand by the term you have passed your final year?
Mm.
Right. Because I think maybe the word I'm looking for, it should be a prototype. That's what
there
I'm looking for at the end. Because the point is, we should be able to train you. Maybe the thinking from starting first year should be to prepare students for this, to say, listen, you can start even now preparing for what your thing is going to be about. Because you literally have 3 to 4 years in an institution, you're getting, look, because I'm at VITS, I have to say, some of the best teaching in the world. Why can't you, by the time you get to four, in fact, even if you could do it earlier,
right?
The system should be able to say, oh, well, look, Stan has done it earlier. He's done it in 2 years.
Mm. Why does he have to work for 4 years?
Let's give Stan the degree. Let the person go make this happen. Because what you then should be doing is to say, okay, where do our entrepreneurs fall? Well, they're not great at bookkeeping.
Right.
So what you then start doing is you take the available data where entrepreneurs have messed up. In the main, take all your traditional entrepreneurships. You put that into the curriculum to say, part of what we also want you to do is improve on bookkeeping, on banking, understand the issues of how you write these proposals together. Because at the end of the day, that's how it's going to work. And I guess it's an oddity of sorts that you kind of also, look, we also need to be open to this to say, maybe South Africa might not have as much funding, so we're going to prepare you such that maybe you can go to Shenzhen, maybe you can go to New York, where you need to be able to present your ideas, but making sure that IP is secure here.
Right. But I mean, the university has all those skills. If you need bookkeeping, I'm sure there's an accounting course.
But what we've not done is created a curriculum that puts all of this together.
Yeah.
I had to like rein him in a little bit. I see he's going down the rabbit hole, but we're like way over time. I mean, it's fascinating. There's so many things to unpack, but yeah.
Yeah, Prof. There's not enough time in the day. We could stay here and chat the whole day. I think the idea of universities driving innovation is great.
And let me give it to you. I got this from the vice chancellor. We had a chat about this, and it is his big idea. He challenged. His big thing is to say, the model of universities needs to change. We cannot be in the 20th century. So referencing, important. Let me not say it. Yeah, but I did love the idea. And I didn't quite understand until we had this conversation what he meant. But this is what he was saying, that listen, we're going to have to holistically. And the issue is we are fighting to catch up. So for us to say, I mean, if I'm not mistaken, you correct me if I'm wrong, Stanford, that's what Stanford does with a lot of its big, with its brightest students. Right. They hardly ever finish. And we should be comfortable with that.
It's almost like an incubation.
Turn the university into an incubation. Damn. That's a brilliant idea. Oh, well.
Prof, thanks for coming through, man. It was a great chat. Appreciate it.
No, thank you. Hopefully I've earned the title.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely. I mean, I've been taking notes. I can see Scott's paper is all written out.
Luckily, we've recorded this as well. So
you know what I mean? It's proper referencing. Prof, thank you so much for making the time.
No, thank you.
If we could, we'd spend a couple of hours going in and just creating models and that fund. Mm-hmm. That fund is definitely a great idea. E-Sovereign Fund. Ladies and gentlemen, that has been the Angle Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. Until next time.
See ya.